Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer. What do you want to talk about today?
I'm totally open. On my mind recently, especially stuff with going on, I'm thinking a lot about, especially as I come into a position of leadership in a bureau. I run a whole bureau now. In my agency, lieutenants are kind of like an LAPD captain where you run a station.
Oh, no shit.
It's very bizarre because I went from sergeant to lieutenant, but I also run two contract cities who refer to me as their chief of police. So,
I get it. I understand.
Council are calling me like, hey, chief, and this is our chief of police. It's just this total mind fuck to like.
Are you guys the only law enforcement agency that cover the area? Is that why?
Yeah. It's cheaper to have us than it is to have their own because they're smaller cities.
Yeah. Same thing in New Jersey. So like, for example, when you have to apply for a firearms permit here, where I live, the state police patrol. So I have to actually put the head of law enforcement agency for us is the lieutenant of the barracks.
Yeah. Right. Same exact thing. So it's funny. But I like it too. But I guess what I was saying is as I come to that spot and I'm just seeing burnout and exhaustion in my people. And I know that it's that kind of way throughout the country. And, especially with everything going on and then even stuff this week, I sense that there's a lot of that out there. All these cops too, that are dealing with shit and like, think they're the only ones, and like, man, if you only knew how many people are out there, kind of navigating all that same stuff. So that was one thing on my mind, but I'm an open book to talk about anything really.
What has changed now from the shift from being a sergeant to now being a lieutenant overall, the most thing you could think about?
I came out of a position at my last assignment as a sergeant was what we call professional standards unit, but used to be known as internal affairs. And, certainly wasn't like a spot I was dying to get into. I was placed there. And it was a very isolating role, for all the reasons you would think. And it's also in my agency, a very small group. You're not running a team or a squad like you were as a patrol sergeant where it's, you're on the go and it's dynamic and things are happening. You don't know what's going to happen one day, the next, and you got people coming and going and transfers and you're trying to help your people get promoted or get a specialty assignment. And all of that's kind of like slow to a halt really. And you turn into a desk jockey for a couple of years. And so it's been nice to be back out in the field and interacting with the people who actually like go out and do the job. And especially I have a lot of new people right now and seeing their excitement, even in this environment that we're in, their excitement to come to work and how excited they get about a car stop with a teener on them, just seeing that excitement in them is just, I love that interaction. And for me, the biggest thing has been reminding myself or seeing for myself that I have an ability to really screw this up or really do it the right way. But if I can be mindful to that, I love cops. I just love cops. And if I can do it the right way, we can create, at least in our own little world of my bureau, we can create the world we want to create and a culture we want to create. Even if the larger system or the larger culture of policing in the United States is a little screwed up or has its issues, we can fix our corner of the world.
Were you or were they reluctant to accept you coming out of internal affairs back into the streets? Because I know that when you're internal affairs, there is this, you are parting ways with everybody else. And that is a tough career decision to accept. And sometimes you have no choice. You have to accept it. I understand that. And I think that how you behaved in internal affairs and your reputation probably helped or would help you. So if you go to internal affairs and you put a hood on and grab a fucking hatchet, you're going to have some difficulty returning to the ranks. So tell me about that transition. Were people a little on the fence or weird about it?
I'm sure they were. Now, you know, they're not going to tell me, but I know that they were, because I have to assume that, because I would be too, right? When I went in to internal affairs, you know, I went in, like I said, reluctantly. And so I decided that my goal was to educate our people as best as I can to reduce the stigma and the stress and the fear that comes with being in an IA. You know, in California, where I am, we're lucky that we have some of the most well-written and firm peace officer rights in the country. You know, everybody bags on us for all sorts of reasons, and many of them are valid. But the one thing we have over most anywhere else is the protections that are in place for the regular line level officer. And it's known as the Peace Officer Bill of Rights. And so we have to follow certain dictates by law, right, to do our investigations the right way. And there's a whole host of ways that a sergeant or a lieutenant or someone above can screw it up, can violate those rights, can really burn somebody. And so my goal going in was, if I'm in the spot, I want to teach the new people what their rights are so they know how to invoke them and how to use them and how to use the union to assist them in an investigation. And that they know that we're not going to play gotcha games and we're not going to, you know, try and trick them into stuff. And also so they knew that we weren't really a proactive department. I'm not going to leave a $10 bill on the squad room floor and then sit there from the other side of the room and wait for someone to pick it up and jump out from behind the bush. You know, that was not the tone I was going to bring to that assignment. So I tried to shed light on it in every way that I could. And then for the sergeants and the supervisors, helping them understand what their roles and responsibilities were so that, yes, you can counsel and train your deputies or your officers, and it doesn't have to turn into an internal affairs investigation. You can handle it, actually, most 90% of things, if you just are willing to step up and earn the stripes that you had sewn on. That's half the battle right there. And then from there, I actually went through and taught the rest of our agency, the people who make the decisions about internal affairs and whether someone's quote unquote guilty or not, what the requirements of that Peace Officer Bill of Rights was, so that they knew how to not violate it. And I tried to think of myself as a wing of the training bureau, not a wing of the administration. If that makes sense.
It's a very good way to look at it.
Well, and so I think I had a reputation of going in there of being, rather by the book. And I probably am and was. But at also time, I've been burned like any cop has who's got any amount of time on, right? I've been stressed out by being in an internal affairs investigation. And I didn't want to forget that. And I think that after 3.5 years in there, people saw that I wasn't out, you know, putting on that hood and sickle, like you say. And I tried to be as interactive as I could. I tried to show my face at the stations and let people know that I wasn't that, you know, that big of a deal. I'd go to the academy and just make sure that people who were coming to us knew that who I was, and that the first time they saw me wasn't going to be sitting across from me at a scary table in an office they didn't even know existed, you know? And so I think that helped coming out of it. And then for me, what helped a lot was, just with time on, you know, the sergeants who are reporting to me have all worked with me. One was my TAC officer 18 years ago, and he's now one of my sergeants. Another sergeant was one academy class behind me. One other one was one of my detectives at one point. So they had a relationship with me beforehand to kind of, I think, quell the fires, as it were, with the people who had no idea who I was.
From a internal affairs perspective, I've shed light on this in the past. You know, often people, if they find themselves in a situation, they will default to running to their union. And before you jump in and make your comments on this, sometimes the union, and I'm not knocking police unions, I understand the purpose of them, the reason that they're there, and I'm 100% a supporter. I do pro bono keynotes for all unions, you know, the major players, the FLP, the PBA. But what I can tell you, what I've observed through my career, and this is advice for people, so don't take it the wrong way, is I would often see men and women that I worked with have an internal cook and that maybe have some substance to it. And they would run and get a union delegate and bring the delegate in to the interview. But what I found was the delegate had no clue what was going on, you know? So, and then if they felt uncomfortable with the delegate, they would go to a list of provided attorneys from a GIF style selection and then show up with these GIF attorneys because they paid their $50 a month membership fees. And a far majority of these attorneys were terrifying. And matter of fact, sometimes the ones that were actually good were hard to get your claws on because everybody had their hands on them and they were free. Any thoughts on the type of attorneys that you guys have had walk into the office when you've had to have counsel present, if that's the way you do it in California? Because in the past 6 months, I've had 3 phone calls from men and women in law enforcement who know me personally and said, I had this attorney, this was the one that was provided, and now I'm really in trouble. And my response to them is, sometimes you're going to have to go out, if it's a serious allegation and you need to absolve yourself or, you know, figure out what you're going to do in this scenario, try to mitigate the repercussions as much as possible. It may be a good idea to try to find somebody on your own and have to go out of pocket. Because the question you have to ask yourself is, how serious is this? How expensive is it going to be if I lose this? Am I going to lose my job? And can I afford to lose my job? Or can I afford to try to take the money grandma gave me and hire an attorney to get myself out of this situation? So what's your thoughts on that?
You know, the attorneys that I've worked with personally, because I can only speak to my own experience here on this particular issue, they've all been fantastic. And they're all dedicated. All they do all day long are LDF defenses, and they work for unions. And in California, our unions are very strong. And I think that strength, and then the alliances between each of the unions, there's groups of unions, has created a demand for services where you get good people who know the work, right? You're not getting guys who like flunked out of, barely passed the bar, and this is the only thing they can get. You're getting top quality people. Plus, again, in California, people love to sue the cops. They love to, you know, put cops on trial. And so you get good trial attorneys who are well-versed in these things. So in California, you don't have to have an attorney present for the interview. You don't have to have anybody present, actually, but you get to choose between an attorney or a representative of your choice. That doesn't have to be an attorney. I see people pick representatives, you know, someone who's maybe from the union or maybe, you know, somewhere else in the agency or department. And I've seen that spiral for them and not go well. But I think you're right. In the first thing any cop needs to know is what the laws in their state are and what the agency is required to provide them, and also what they're required to provide the agency. And your union may or may not be the best avenue of approach for that. There are unions, and there are groups of unions I see, particularly in your area of the country, that don't do themselves any favors. And they bring that same bull in a china shop attitude into an IA interview, and like, well, good luck with that, you know, and they dig a hole for the poor cop who was just trying to do the right thing and screwed up a little bit, maybe, or maybe didn't screw up at all. But the union brings their agenda into the interview, and all of a sudden it blows up in their face. So I would say the first thing for anybody, if you're going to have an attorney, your first meeting with them should never be 5 minutes before the interview, right? like feel them out, suss them out, explain it to them, get a sense for them. And you should feel confident in who's representing you. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's interesting. I watch this over and over again. People are just ill-advised. And like you said, you have the unions come in and start to fight with the administration, and it fires the administration up. And let's face facts. We know that administrations are not supposed to be involved in the internal affairs process, but they are very heavily involved in the internal affairs process. And they will tell people, and they will, and their henchmen will listen. I know that for a fact. And to shed some light on that, you know, you're going to try to, there's, in my opinion, some psychological strategy to trying to calm the wolves down when they've been set upon thee. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's better for an attorney who can approach it with a more stoic and calm, cool head to try to resolve the issue. But, you know, you gotta be careful with these people. And I'm telling everybody that, you know, don't think that you get to pick from 20 names on a list and you just randomly pick them and go, yeah, this guy looks like he's close to me. That'll work. I've seen it, man. I've seen these guys that were like going to get a second opinion, right? You don't want to spend the 10 grand on a retainer fee to get a real attorney. they'll talk to you for 5 minutes, especially attorneys who like cops. And a lot of attorneys do like cops, even though they might be mm-hmm. defense attorneys. They're not anti-cop. I haven't met many defense attorneys that hate the police, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, me too.
So, you know, call these guys. And it's so funny. Every cop hates a defense attorney until they need a defense attorney. Yeah. Right. You know, this guy, I got this guy off. Well, you know, I'm in trouble now. And people have to understand who are listening to this, who aren't members of law enforcement, that we're held to a higher standard. And there's no job where you can constantly be scrutinized on and off duty for any kind of behavior, any kind of decisions that are made that are volatile to your work life. And that's a real significant factor that people have to consider when we're saying, you know, departments have policies they have to follow. They've got to file the internal affairs complaints, they have to follow up with them and do the investigation. Doesn't mean a lot of them are going to be sustained. It's just part of the process, part of the deal.
Yeah.
Tell me about going forward now as a lieutenant, what you're enjoying the most about your position and things that maybe you didn't know or forgot that you, you know, wanted to do that are coming back to fruition.
I love to train was the biggest thing that going, you know, from being a deputy to then sergeant, I love to do any sort of training I could. And any chance I got to go to training, I would take. And I always wanted to encourage that in my people when I was a sergeant. And then in IA, I didn't really have a chance to do it. Like, there's only so many trainings I can justify once you go to IA school for my people there, right? It's like, so coming back into a position where it's like, okay, now I have like a bit of a budget and I have some influence over how to dictate how that goes. And I can build relationships with people who have meeting spaces in my area and that sort of thing. And I can bring in quality training for my people that I think is important for our area, or I can start to send people out to training and just setting a tone and a culture that I think is important for us all to have. You know, one of the first things I did was spent some money and bought everybody in my bureau the book Emotional Survival for Law Enforcement, you know, by Kevin Gilmartin, which I think is a Bible book that should be read in every academy. It's a book I used to give out as a sergeant to everybody on my squad. I just gave that to everybody in the bureau. And also another book called Hold the Line by a woman, Cindy Doyle, who's amazing. She's a police wife and therapist, couples therapist in Dallas. She wrote a great book on cops and relationships, because it should come as no surprise to anyone listening to this who's a cop that those things are kind of an issue for us, relationships and, you know, marriages and that sort of stuff. I just gave those to everybody and was like, hey, I think these are important for you. These could save your career, your relationship, or even your life. And I want you to have these tools now. And we're going to be talking about them in the future. And what's been cool, because I've done this a few times before, but this one I got to do to, like, you know, dozens of people, not just a couple. And, you know, you get the salty guys, the older guys who like don't want to hear it. But almost invariably, they come back around and they like comment about how something in the book helped or they learned something new. But the new people coming in right now who grew up being comfortable with the idea of like personal development, self-development, are all on board with this stuff. You know, they get it. And it's encouraging for me to see this group of people we have coming in now who are going to take over for all of us. And, you know, this wellness conversation and this resilience conversation that is finally starting to get some traction nationwide, like they're actually going to live up to it. And they're going to be the ones to take us across the goal line on it, you know, cause I'm kind of in the middle of generations, right? The people who came before me, they're still around, the salty old guys who, you know, that like really hardcore old school cop is retired out now, but there's still the remnants of like, the people they trained are still working for us. They're the probably admin at this point, or, you know, the older guys on patrol, and they're set in their ways. They're not going to change. And I'm in the middle somewhere where I was kind of trained by that group, but I also see that there's a better way to maybe approach officer health and wellness and resilience. So I'm in the middle, but then there's this new group is just, they're all in. And I love that. I think it's great.
That's awesome, man. And for those of you who couldn't figure this out, we are talking to Garrett Tesla. That's two A's at the end of his last name from the squad room. And I have questions about your podcast. And I think it's important to discuss some of the stuff. And you've been doing it for a while. I think you were one of the first people that actually went on their podcast. And and did an interview, and I learned a lot from it, which was good for me. Oh, and nice. I continue to try to scrutinize how I'm doing things here to try to make it better for the end listener. What motivated you to do a police podcast, and when did you start doing one?
So I got promoted to sergeant in 2013, and I got transferred to, this is typical California, I got transferred to a substation that was 12 miles away from my house, which meant I had an hour 15 commute to get to work on night shift.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Right.
That's how bad the traffic is where you guys are?
That's how bad the traffic is. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
So I had a lot of time to kill, and I kind of got sick of listening to music, and I started getting into podcasts. I have a history in radio from my prior life before I was a cop. I have a whole other life there. So I was kind of interested in all that stuff and the technical stuff and the audio issues and editing, whatever. But in hindsight, I now know I was starting to spiral, and I was doing and seeing and experiencing all the things your like stereotypical burnt out cop was feeling. Yeah, I was eating like crap. I was gaining a ton of weight. I couldn't exercise. I was unmotivated. On night shift, I was straight up depressed. Wife, and I was like quick to anger. My wife was, you know, challenging me on why I was behaving in such a way, like all those things. And I decided I needed to do something about it. And I started doing some research on my own and trying to figure things out. And I started to create a path forward for myself and started to bring some of these things into briefings with me, because, you know, I was a sergeant, so they kind of had to listen to me when I would talk. And I started doing these like weird, like I was the only sergeant who come in and like I do a briefing on meditation or mindfulness, or like, hey, maybe you guys should try yoga, you know. And I gave out the book that I was just talking about, and relationship issues or how to manage stress. And, you know, we talk about the tactical things too and the things going on in the beats, but I tried to emphasize a lot of that. And almost always someone would pull me aside later on and say, hey, I've been struggling with that too, or I didn't know what to do, or hey, I went and did that resource you talked to about and I really appreciate it, really helped. It just dawned on me that if I'm having these problems and my partners are having these problems, that it's a universal issue or near universal issue. And if I'm learning these things and it's working for me and it's working for my buddies, maybe I can like pay it forward a little bit and share some of this stuff. But at the same time, I didn't want to just talk about what I'd learned. I wanted to learn from other experts. And this is in 2016, right? At this point, I'm the longest running police podcast that's out there. I don't have the most episodes by far, but I'm the longest running. And I was like, you know, there's no one else talking about this stuff in a way that can kind of get out and spread information. And podcasts were just kind of becoming a thing. I thought, well, maybe if I have a podcast, I can get some experts on to talk and teach me things that I need to know that they wouldn't give me the time of day to do if I just called them up, you know? like we were talking, you know, about Tim Kennedy earlier. Like, I couldn't get Tim Kennedy on the phone to just chat with me for an hour. But if I said, hey, I have a podcast, would you come on and talk to a bunch of cops about this? And he loves cops. He went through the academy not far from my house here. And he was like, absolutely, I'd love to jump on. And so I got to pick Tim Kennedy's brain for an hour and create a relationship with him that has really actually provided some great information that I was able to use. And I've done that, I don't know, 150, 60 times since then. And so I could say it was altruistic and I just wanted to help. Partly true, but it's also selfish. I wanted to learn from all these experts, you know, how to fix my sleep and warning signs for all the cardiovascular issues that we deal with. And so it just kind of became a thing, you know? And I hear weekly, if not daily, from all around the world, I'm sure you do too, from people who are like, cops who are like, me too. Or I never thought someone else was experiencing this as well. Or I thought I was the only one. And if there's been any great thing about it, it's been help teaching cops that, nah, man, you're not alone. These are issues based on the job we have, not on where you live, not on who your lieutenant is or your sergeant or your chief is. It's based on the job we're tasked with doing.
You said that there's a meditation practice that you were advocating. What is your meditation practice and what has it done for you?
I want to emphasize practice because, you know, I'm not perfect at it because it is a practice and I come and go from it. And I find now that I will let it slide at times, but I always end up returning to it. For me, I don't typically use an app anymore, though I sometimes will for like a guided meditation. If I'm looking for something specific or maybe a prompt or I'm trying to like work something out, but you know, meditation could be a bunch of different things for a bunch of different people. For me specifically, I just try and spend 10 minutes, five if I can only do five, and just, you know, close my eyes and just focus on my breath. And if I lose my attention on that breath, just try to come back to it. And the important thing for people who are meditation curious is that there's no perfect way to do it, nor is there no way to fail at it. Our minds are going to run rabid on us. And that, and if you're trying to experience a meditation and you think you failed because your mind wandered, that's precisely the point of the meditation, is to capture the moment where you recognize your mind wandering and the ability to bring it back. So when your mind wanders in a meditation, you're actually being successful when you capture it and you recognize it. So for me, it's just simple, just a simple in-out breath, count to 10 and return to one. And try to do that for about 10 minutes. Thoughts will come up. I've had podcast episodes, ideas come up in my head. I've had solutions to problems come up while I'm doing these things. And I've also had nothing. And I've also been very frustrated at the end of 10 minutes where I feel like I did nothing, you know, and I just got nothing out of it. And I was antsy and I needed to get going with my day, or I could hear something going on in the background that was distracting me, whatever it is. But for me, it cultivates an ability to create some space between the input we're getting, or the whatever input I'm receiving from the world, whether it's a stressful event, or it's, you know, the kids, or it's the bills or whatever else, and an ability to pause and decide on what my reaction is going to be, rather than just, or rather I can respond to that stimulus rather than just reacting like most of us often do when we experience a stressful thing. We just kind of react, you know. That's been what is good for me. But I highly recommend guided meditations for people who are just curious about it or they want to try it. There's plenty of easy apps out there, Headspace or Calm, or there's plenty of stuff on Peloton, even if you got a Peloton. So that's my personal practice. And then I do a lot of journaling too.
What's interesting is the same thing for me with meditation. I'm much more of a strict meditator. I will be honest with you, in the past 2 days, I actually haven't meditated. There's been some weird things going on in my life, but I will actually finish this podcast and get my first meditation in for the day. What I will say is that, I don't know, I was in a very deep meta sleep today, and I got up and I was a little late to waking up. I was interrupted rudely by a Rhodesian Ridgeback at 3:44 a.m. who woke me up out of my deep meditation. I'm sorry, deep sleep. Now, I've been pretty consistent for about 2.5 years, and the same thing. I really, you know, just things really unaffect me that may have affected me further or more in the past. So I would agree with that. And there are many different styles of meditation out there that people could look into if they have interest in it. And I'm telling you, it's great.
It is, right? And it's funny because, and this is okay, this exactly proves my point of why I wanted to do the podcast in general. My podcast, I mean, long-term. I would bet that a vast majority of your listeners would think Dennis from Street Cop, he doesn't meditate. Nah, he's not into that woo-woo shit, right? But it's not. And I've had tier one operators on my show, Navy SEALs, Green Berets, Delta Force. I've had a lot of those guys on my show. And across the board, they have a meditation practice. And it's like, that's what we need. That's why I want to show it to cops in that vein. You know, it's not the hippie woman with the dreadlocks and the flowing robes that you have to aspire to be. Not at all. Tier one operators, professional athletes, CEOs, they use this because it works. You can take all the mysticism and the spirituality out of it and just practice the tactical aspects of it. And you will, I guarantee you will have a benefit in your life. And it takes time, but it's a practice just like anything else, right? Like we were talking this week, I kind of had a rough week and I caught myself in a spiral before I really took a nosedive, right? And it was only because of that practice that we both experienced where I was able to be like, hey, what's going on? Like I created a space where I was able to respond rather than starting to react. I noticed I was starting to react rather than just respond. And was able to kind of, you know, pull up on the gear, so to speak.
So there are things that have convinced me why meditation was so important, but I'm going to tell you the most important reason why, for me, at least, it was a motivator. A lot of you probably aren't familiar with who Ray Dalio is. Do you know who Ray Dalio is, Garrett?
Yeah.
Okay. So to give context, those who don't know who he is a he was the owner or CEO of a hedge fund called Bridgewater. And Ray is probably worth now $17 billion. Once Ray had finished what he considers to be the second out of three parts of his life at the age of 60, he decided to now share with the public all his knowledge on how to invest, what's smart, and how he sees things. And when you made $17 billion, there are some people out there who probably are going to listen. If you actually watch Ray Dalio interviews on YouTube or hear him on a podcast, people will say to him, Ray, what's the one piece of advice you would give people to be successful? And his response every single time is meditate. I've been meditating for 20 years. I meditate twice at 40 years, whatever he said, twice a day, 20 minutes a day. Now my meditation practice is twice a day, 22 minutes a day. But I actually heard something on another podcast recently, and I'm a very, very big Seth Godin fan. I mean, big.
Like, yeah, me too.
If you told me right now, like Seth Godin's going to be across the street, I would shut all this equipment down and I'd be out of here running for my dear life to go. So I'm a significant Seth Godin fan. He deserves all the accolades that he's given even outside of here. But I was on a podcast with this guy named Chase Jarvis. And I just try to find Seth Godin anywhere I can to hear what he has to say. Even some of it repetitive, but sometimes there's some new nuggets. But in that, you know, he said, everybody's job is to take care of yourself first. And it wasn't actually Seth's quote. It was, they were quoting a woman who they spoke with. And what that means is every day when you wake up, your number one priority is you. Right? You have to make yourself a priority. And if you really start to deep dive into the thought of that, what good are you to everybody else if you're not taking care of yourself? So I come before everybody else in the beginning because I care about everybody that much. It's a rare day that I do not, or that I leave my house without working out, because I know that that spins things up for me mentally, mm-hmm. where I can come in and actually, you know, provide who I'm supposed to be to the people that work at this office or to the world. I get that meditation practice done. I have discipline with that stuff because I know what it means for everybody else. So there is some selfishness to it, but if you actually look at it, it's very selfless. So make yourself your top priority. Stop putting it to the second. You are the top priority. Nothing's ever going to get that insane that you can't be the top priority. You have to take care of yourself.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll jump in and add to that too, I think, because a lot of cops think, you know, they don't have time for it, or they don't have the mental space or the energy to do those things. And that they do need to put other people first. And to kind of reinforce the point you just made, you know, think about that for any cop out there, think about all the times you've come home and you've collapsed on the couch and you haven't engaged with the family and you want nothing to do with any inputs. You can't decide what you want for dinner. And it's that conversation over and over and over and over again. And you don't want to go out on the weekends or your days off because you're just wiped out because you've been putting all these other people first, right? And if you can create a practice that emphasizes, and some of that, here comes a cheesy word, but self-care, right? If you can emphasize some of those things, imagine how much better that relationship with your kids or your wife is going to be when you do come home. And you are able to recognize, I'm tired, or I'm stressed, or today was a really hard day for all these reasons, and that's okay. But I can't let that leak into my relationship with my kids. How much better of a parent are you going to be if you're able to recognize that stuff? And that all comes from a meditation practice or some sort of mindfulness practice, whether it's journaling, mindful walking, mindful eating, whatever. For me, it's meditation. For you, it's meditation. It might be something else for someone else. But without that self-awareness and that emotional intelligence, you're making life worse for everybody else.
I think that there's certainly something to be said, and I'm not an expert in the field, to having a physical health routine as well. Where I think that probably does a lot for you mentally. I believe there's a lot of correlation between being a disciplined, healthy person and, you know, and leading a better life.
Absolutely correct. Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. And I don't mean to not include that. I probably didn't include it because that's the area I struggle with the most, consistency. And I fluctuate the most is on the physical stuff. And it's probably where I'm the most self-conscious and where I'm lacking and what I'm able to bring to everybody else. But no, of course, it absolutely is.
I think a lot of times when you can commit to something and stay committed, I always tell people, if you can get to the gym and stay at the gym for 2 weeks, you'll work out for 10 months. I promise you.
It's those 2 weeks that people just don't want. Do it for do it for 30 days, and I promise you, what you'll feel you will miss if you don't do it. There's discipline employed with it, and so you have to have the discipline. Like, listen, I woke up today, I was like, I don't feel like fucking working out, and I'm like, there he is, the little bitch inside of me. Right. So your ass is going downstairs. I'm fortunate enough to have a gym equipment in my basement. Your ass is going downstairs and you're going to work out. And I'm glad that I did. You know what I mean? I actually do this thing where I say, you're not going to eat unless you earn it. So I'll come home. I'm hungry. I'm like, man, I'm fucking hungry. I could eat dinner. There's this thought of what I'm going to have for dinner. I start thinking about it and I'll say, I'm hungry at 6:15 or at 6:30, but I could probably put 40 minutes in right now and then really enjoy this dinner later on and feel much better about myself. And it's those times in your life, those little moments where you actually control your inner bitch and get to the work is where you see the most significant change and impact. Yeah. And I wasn't born disciplined. I'm just committed to being disciplined because I like the result of the discipline. It's real shit.
I think too, a lot of people I've struggled with this think I'm not disciplined. I'm not disciplined enough.
You can tell yourself anything you want to fucking tell yourself. I had a friend yesterday tell me, I could read it to you. He said, I wish I wasn't old, fat, and bald. I said, that's how you see yourself. You're a year younger than me. Me, in my mind, I'm 29 years old, right?
Right.
I'm not old, fat, and bald. I'm fucking, you wouldn't believe, people have no idea how old I am when they see me. They think I'm 30 years old. I'm 40.
Yeah.
The story I'm telling myself is I'm not going to look like the way you look. And I'm not going to tell my, that, then where you start with that mistake is by saying it to yourself, who you are, you're defining yourself. Mm-hmm. That's the story right. You're telling yourself. That's who you're going to fucking be.
Oh yeah. It's absolutely right. And, like for anyone who's like struggling with that, like think about it, like you are disciplined. You went through an academy. That's an incredibly disciplined process. Right there is proof that you have the ability to be disciplined. You know, you're disciplined enough to get up for that, those brutal hour shifts, you know, whether you start at 4 a.m. or 6 a.m. or 2 in the morning, all these goofy shifts, like you're disciplined, you come to work. You're assuming that this external force of you have to because it's your job is the reason you're showing up. But like, no, you're disciplined about your job. You're disciplined about your training. If you shoot at the range regularly, you're disciplined about those things. Like we all have a level of discipline. Like I do the majority of the cooking in my house, right? And so for me, my choice every night is, do I cook something, you know, healthy and fulfilling for my family? Or do we just order takeout? Or do I just leave it to my wife who's not going to do it? Or do I just let the kids run rampant through the kitchen? Like that's an undisciplined approach to something like cooking dinner. So no, I cook dinner every night. That is a way that I am disciplined, right? And so you can take that same mentality into these, you'll find those things if you think about them, you'll find them in any area of your life. You know, I'm disciplined to not do a pile of cocaine just because everyone else says I should. No, like we all have areas in our lives where we're very disciplined. We can just translate those or transfer those into other areas. But also in that process, I think we need to give ourselves a little grace and a little patience and a little understanding that change is hard. And there's a whole lot of reasons physiologically and emotionally and psychologically, we don't want to change. And we have to be attentive to those and we have to knock them down. We have to, you know, override them, but we need to be aware that they're there.
I think people tend to put words like diet, exercise into their mind of what makes it so difficult to be disciplined. And I remind a couple of people who work in this office of how we live our lives. It's our lifestyle. We don't live a lifestyle. I'm not holding myself accountable to what everybody else looks like. And you hear that all the time. Don't listen to anybody. You look fine. Oh, you're skinny enough. I'm not worried about what your standard is. That means nothing to me. I'm worried about what my standard is and how I envision myself professionally, physically, and emotionally. And you have the world telling you things over and over. Oh, don't you work too much? Take a break. You're working out twice. I get this one all the time. How many days a week do you work out? I work out 7 days a week. Well, you know, not only 7 days a week, but I try to get two in a day. And that leaves a good margin. And I talk about this a lot of margin for error. And so if I miss two or three, which happens every week, I essentially work out 11 or 12 times a week. In the past week, I've had a lot going on. I've been able to work out in the past 4 days, I've worked out six times. But people say to me, well, when do you let your body rest? And my response is, I feel better than I've ever felt in my life. outside of the awful knees that I have, that I'm guessing I'm probably going to have to go to some foreign country to get stem cell injections. I'm actually going to see it's essentially what I had to retire on was a knee injury. So I continue to live with that. It's actually really getting flared up lately as I progress into my 40s. And anyway, so watch what people are saying to you about slow it down, take it easy. You're going to hurt yourself. Don't listen to those people. You know what I mean? Like, you can live up to your standard, what you want it to be. And Garrett's right. Little by little, let's not make a complete, that's the one thing I said this for years. When I used to go to a gym, I'd watch January 5th. Here's every person who is so out of shape that you could tell it's the first time in their life they're going to try to take control. And who do they get with at the gym? Some 23-year-old, you know, CrossFit expert who can do muscle ups in his sleep. And you're training somebody who's never exercised in their life, and they're murdering them. They are just destroying them. And if I was a personal trainer, I'd say, here's the first thing. Stop drinking soda. And we'll see you next week. Right? So you're gonna drink water from now on. You know, that's a big step for a lot of people. Soda is literally killing you. So, and then you hear people, oh, you know, it's my weakness. It's my weakness. I just got to have a soda when I start my shift. Oh, you know, I get one of those big ones and I got to have a soda. Do you have to have a soda? Right? Do you have to have one once a month if you need it that bad? But you're surprised once you stop drinking soda and you won't want soda anymore. And it's just as simple as these small decisions in life. I'm at a restaurant. Oh, what would you like to have to drink, sir? I'll have water with lemon. Right? You're going to survive having dinner with water, lemon, but you know what's really cool? You're probably going to shed 15 pounds off your belly because if you're drinking that much soda. That's how detrimental it is to your life. It is fucking killing you. Maybe next week is what? Hey, you know what? We're done with fast food. Hey, we'll see you next week. What do you mean? Don't eat fast food. That's what I mean. No more fast food. Well, what do? Find healthier options. Go to fucking Whole Foods or whatever. Go find a salad, right? That's your Salad Works or whatever places that, you know, that's, begin to educate yourself on food. Get some understanding of what you're putting into your body. And I'm not perfect. I had fucking bread pudding last night, right? And I got to tell you, it was worth it. It's fucking unbelievable, right? I saw my friend get it. We went to dinner. It was a business meeting. And I went, how is it? He goes, the best bread pudding I ever had. I said, make it two of them motherfuckers. And I need a cup of coffee as well, fucking 6 o'clock at night. But I'm not doing that every night, you know? And that's just watch your environments, watch people who you're hanging out with. And I hate to say it, and I'll say it again publicly. I've said it 1,000 times. Alcohol is the anti-production substance. There is nothing that is going to hinder your progression and growth more in your life than alcohol. Now, your decision to fuck with alcohol is your decision. That's fine, right? But I am telling you for a fact, you are hindering yourself on every level of growth with every time you ingest alcohol. Guess what? You can decide to go out and have White Claws this weekend, but you're not going to develop. I promise you that. That I can guarantee. So sorry for going on a Bonino rant.
No, it's great. And I'm curious because, you know, we've had conversations off mic, lengthy conversations, and you are an incredibly generous person for anybody listening. I want them to know that they see here is exactly who you are as a person. And we've had some
might
really
not be a good thing. That might not be a good
thing. No, I mean that as a compliment.
Thank you.
And, but I've always been struck by your self-awareness and your emotional intelligence and in how it relates to policing, especially. Right. And so, you know, I had to come through my path kind of on the back end. You know, I had to kind of unscrew a whole bunch of stuff that is probably still twisted up in different ways because I, you know, in hindsight, realize now that I was maladaptive to the stresses and traumas of the job. And not just to place it all on the job, but my reaction to that and also, you know, just life. And so I found my path, which has now worked for me. I'm curious what your path was, because it seems to me that you very early on decided that you were going to be an act and subscribe to a certain ethos, the one you just basically just talked about. But what was that process for you, or how did you come to that?
I think I had a shift in my early 30s. I'm always reverse engineering what my goals are. And I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get to that. I went to 3 police academies in 4.5 years. I was not satisfied with where I was the first 2 times. In the 3rd place, I was significantly satisfied with. So that wasn't fun. That sucked. But I was willing to do that. Fast forward into my early 30s, I am recognizing that there is a better version of myself to be had. And what I have to do is collect the data on how to do that and then stay committed and disciplined to what that is. And probably getting even more significantly disciplined into my 40s now. Really, it just comes full circle, man. I always tell people, anything you do that's positive, you're progressing forward. It doesn't matter what you're doing. For example, Tent City, 2 weeks ago, Washington, D.C., I get up. I'm like, I got to get back down there and help everybody. This sucks. Let me drive 3 hours back to load the trailer up and bring all the stuff. And, you know, like, I'm like, what am I doing? What am I doing here? But it may not have been the smartest decision at front, but it was better than sitting around and drinking alcohol. Now, what happened at Tent City is I got an intro that Sunday, which happened to be a fluke, to a guy who's higher up in a very large company. And now that led into, you would not believe it, some amazing things. So sometimes even taking these little steps that are positive, and I'm trying to think of the right word for them, but you know, what came out of that for making that decision that day, that one simple decision, it's not only priceless, but it's going to be really good for our business. And I probably saved myself 30 grand in a business expense by going there that day. Now, we didn't make any money on, there was nobody there. Sunday, it was fucking dead, you know? And I was like, let's start breaking this thing. It was hot as shit. It was 91 degrees, but I got into this conversation. It worked out good. So I'll tell you just one quick side story if that didn't make sense. I was in real estate years ago and I would go to open houses on Sundays. And my wife had said to me, did you sell the house? I go, you know, it's dawning on me that every Sunday that I go there and sit at these open houses for 4 hours, that nobody is going to buy the fucking house from me. And she said, why do you go? I said, well, I don't know. I always feel like if I'm at least doing something, trying to get to my goals, you know, that would, there's got to be some kind of resolve. I'm learning about the business. I'm understanding people, what they're looking for in houses. I'm getting better at explaining the houses and learning the houses. 4 or 5 months later, my phone would start ringing. Hey, this is so-and-so. We met you at an open house. We thought you were super nice. We'd like you to list our house. If people don't have context of what that means, you're talking $5,000 to $10,000 paychecks on a house listing. And all of a sudden, this starts happening all the time. Why? Because I was there on Sundays, not looking at the initial rate of return of my time. Unbeknownst to me, 5-6 months later, because of the investment that I put in, all of a sudden the phone's ringing. And now my real estate career is starting to take off. And that people, you know, and I'm really, really giving a good real estate service. So those people are excited and tell their 4 other friends who plan on selling the next 3 years. And all of a sudden we've got a business, you know? So there's a saying that I love, and it's by Grant Cardone. It says, sometimes I do the things I don't love to do the things I do love. And, you know, I'm planning on being here for another 60 years. You got to start acting like that. You know, you can't just disregard your mind, your body, and all those things. And I struggle with discipline every day, but I also get better at discipline every day. I struggle just like everybody else. I see those fucking Tostitos, bro. You know what I mean? I know what they taste like, but I know how easy to say, you know what? I'll deal with this hunger. I'll be thankful. I'll go for this 18-hour fast. There's another saying I love. It says, would you rather spend an hour in the gym now or an hour at the doctor's office later? You tell me. You want to be 70 fucking 2 years old going from doctor to doctor? My parents do it. Literally doctor to doctor every week, all day long. That's their fucking life. You know, the people who put more thought into, you know, into taking care of themselves, and they're, where are they going? Just like your parents, Europe. Right? Planning on their next summer home, seeing their grandkids. You can be around until you're 100 now, piece of cake. If you reverse engineer that. And listen, I'm certainly not parting ways with the thoughts of, I understand mental health is a significant factor in why people can't get moving. But at some point, you've got to make some moves because nobody's sending a rescue boat. That's it. I don't know what to tell you. That's the fucking shitty truth of life, is there isn't going to be a shoulder to cry on every single time. Nobody's sending a rescue boat, and you got to start swimming. And all of a sudden you start swimming and you see that ocean. You think there's no land in sight. Oh shit, there's an island. Then you get to the island, you don't realize that there was a plane on the island, and you don't know how to pilot a plane, but you start figuring it out and fixing the plane. And then you get on that plane, it all starts to, and there's just theories on this, I appreciate you saying those nice things about me. And I really don't say this to try to brag. I want to let people know that it's just an example of, if you want to do something, you can do it. All you got to have is discipline. It's an important part of it. You've got to tell yourself, this is who I'm going to be. I'm going to be. Ever tell you how terrified I was of getting on planes?
No.
Terrified. Fucking terrified. I mean, it was literally torture. I'd say, Lord, why would you put me on this fucking plane again? Why is this my job? But on the other side of it, I would say to myself, you want to be a national police figure? You want to be a public speaker? You have stuff to offer to cops around the country? You want them to know what you know? You want to save these guys' lives? You want to be like Gary Vaynerchuk? He's on a fucking plane every week. You better get your ass on the plane. And you know what? I never second guessed it. I sat there and I tortured myself. Oddly enough, now, through all that torture, I also educated myself to understand more about planes. And I fucking love flying now. You know, that's weird. I miss it. I haven't flown in like 6 weeks. I need to be on a plane soon. Fucking love it. Like, I love flying. So I don't say this to try to impress people. I'm saying this because I wish somebody would have said this to me 20 years ago. Because who knows where my life would have been now. Listen, I'm very thankful for the life that I've led, but who knows? Who knows where I would have been? Just sometimes takes somebody just opening a window and saying, look through here. You see this? What do you think? Oh, I like that. You can do this too. You can be just like this. You'd like to look like this on the beach? You can do this. It's within your reach. Why do you think you can't do this? Because you're telling yourself that, or your stupid fucking friends and your lazy shit family is telling you that you can't. And sometimes you get rid of those motherfuckers. That's it. And sometimes you work with those motherfuckers and there's nothing you could do. You got to shut them out and keep it professional. And that's true. You want to hang out with your bum friends? Be a bum. That's it. You be a bum.
Yeah. You said something way back that, and you just brought it back to it, but I think it's so key that you saw a different life for yourself, And I think we get into the job, we get into the rotating shifts, we get into the chaos of raising a family, and we forget the option of living a different life. And that doesn't mean leaving police work necessarily, but it means choosing a different path for your mindset, your health, your relationships. And it takes so much work to really make those shifts, but
it's worth it.
It's worth it. The alternative sucks. It's worth it. The alternative is going to kill you. If you know that there's a better version out there, or you see a vision for a better version of yourself out there and you don't take it, you're killing yourself. It's not gonna be today, but you are killing yourself. It is worth it in every way, but you have to do the work. The work is tough. The work sucks. It's physical, it's mental, it's emotional, it's doing your homework, it's finding the right people to be around, it's getting rid of the people that you shouldn't be around. It's hard work, but there really isn't an alternative.
It's worth it, man. I'm telling you, folks, I would have never thought in a million years that this would be the path that I'd be on. Maybe I've manifested it, just sit in the academies and watch these people teach, and I would try to figure out, why did out of 100 instructors in this 6 months of the academy, did I like these two or three people that came in? And why did I hate everybody else? And what are these people learning here? And I just always envision myself instructing at academies to police officers saying, this is such bad training. It's just such crap. Literally half this place is fucking sleeping from PT this morning. It's just systems improvement is really what my forte is. The top three strengths that I have. I would say number three is being an amazing lover. That's probably my thing.
I was gonna make a joke. Never mind.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, make the joke. Let's go. Come on. Don't let them. Don't stop.
Lost it now. I didn't get a punch on it. And missed opportunity.
Yeah. Oh man, don't miss those opportunities again. Just please jump in and make that joke. But obviously I'm kidding. But I'm the same guy that everybody was and is, and it's just a matter of the first step saying, you know what, I could do more. or I don't like this, I can do that. And I'm very, very happy with the version of myself that I am now. I'm always looking forward to constant improvement. And there are many things I'm embarrassed about in the past. Many things that I have to own because it was me. But there's a reason why I was behaving and acting that way. And there's a lot, there's actually a lot of reasons. You know, the abuse of alcohol, the socioeconomic environment that I grew up in, the acceptable behavior that my peers condoned. So that is not who I aspire to be when I realized I could be a better version of that. And I got to tell you, being a better version of the best version of yourself is it's so rewarding. It's just a blast. You're going to come to the next conference, dude?
I hope so. And I plan to. I wanted to be there this time and forget why, but
stay committed.
Oh, I was supposed to speak somewhere else. I was supposed to speak at a different conference. That thing got canceled because of COVID. And so I kind of left sitting on my hands. So yeah, I know I'd love to join in the next.
Come on, man. It's going to be fucking legit. I mean, I'll tell you off air who else we have coming, and it's almost finalized, but it's pretty cool shit. And then we'll announce it obviously publicly.
I mean, what you've done is incredible. And I'm not just trying to blow smoke, but literally one of the first texts I sent out when I got promoted was to you. It was like, who do I talk to about getting your stuff out here? Right. And I was like, super quick, because I now had an opportunity to bring Street Cop out to my agency, into my area. And I wanted to bring in something that was different and dynamic for all the reasons that you guys are so popular. I always point to you. You're, you know, the Gary V of the police profession. That's kind of
thing. Very nice. Dude, we got to hang out more. I mean, you make me feel like $1 million. Jesus Christ.
Right.
Would you consider marrying me? Because I could have you in my house all the time. This would be great.
Let me check with my wife. I'm not sure she'll be in on that, but
I can check with mine too.
But you guys do an amazing job, and the depth of the instructors you've come out. I mean, I've had Jeff Smith. Has been on the show. So, you know, with all those people that you have and what you've done, and then especially with the pivot you did during COVID, when everyone else kind of threw up their arms and was like, I guess we'll just go home and stop training. And you created a different model, and you proved that you could do online training, and you could do it well, and you could do it in depth. You know, I think you showed that there's a new model coming to fruition about how we can train our people and how we can train ourselves. And we don't have to necessarily rely on the agency, and we should never assume the agency is going to teach us everything we need to know anyway. But what's been awesome being part of, you know, the Facebook page and the group and everything like that is seeing cops all around the country who just love being cops. They love the hunt, right? And that was the kind of cop I wanted. I always loved being, I loved hunting. I loved the big grab, or I loved looking for it, or I loved finding the self-initiated stop that led to something good. That was. And I luckily live in a culture at my agency where that has been from day one, the culture here, and you're encouraged to do that. You don't get accolades for hooking the warrant. That's someone else's work. You know, you get accolades for finding the dope or the guns on the stuff on the car that you stopped for a reason you came up with. And so seeing cops come back to policing is awesome.
It's very rewarding. And I also want to counter that with, I get my dick kicked in nonstop.
Of course you do. You're interacting with a bunch of cops. You're not going to, right? Like that, there's a flip side. There's a dichotomy to policing where cops are, they love to be aggressive and the self-initiated stuff. But there is a faction of policing too that are just going to be miserable, and they're going to be grumpy, and they're going to be the haters. And they're like, it just comes with the territory. But I know you have a strength and a will I know supersedes mine in terms of your ability to deal with those people. But I see in your own groups, you shifting opinions and shifting tides and changing some of those opinions. And that's just some of the good work that's out there.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And that's really, I always tell Kenny, because he gets worked up sometimes about, he's one of our instructors, Kenny Williams. He gets worked up sometimes about the comments that he sees. And I said, Ken, you're not seeing things the right way. You are seeing from the other angle. Switch back to the great things that we're doing. And I think we got a real shot. And when I say kicked in the dick, it's not just from the public. I mean, this is a real business, and there are real issues when you run a business, and there are some real tough calls and sometimes that unexpected things that arise that you could never anticipate. It will kick your fucking ass around. Like it does. How you respond to that is the key. And my VP always makes a joke. She said it, I don't know, I think I put sort of podcast episode, so maybe a month ago, she goes, you know, this place would be on fire legitimately. And we'd all be losing our minds. And you tell everybody, sit down, relax, go get a hose, go get a fire extinguisher. We'll figure it out. And like literally logs would be falling from the ceiling. And there's no other way to go about almost anything in life than a calm, emotionless response, trying to see, how do we fix this? You could be as mad as you want, because I said the police academy literally does nothing for anybody. But your better response would have been, well, what are we doing wrong? And can you help us? And the answer is, we can. I'm working on it. I'm not just saying you guys suck and you're killing cops. I'm saying, here's what I think you should be doing. Right? I don't think you need to be swinging a stick at a bag 25 sessions through a police academy and screaming, get back, because you'll never do that ever again in your life. I think that you should have some marching in the academy, but let's not make it 45, 50 hours of dress and parade, you know, to do a 5-minute ceremony at the end of the police academy for a graduation. Because I always tell people, I make this joke in class, I go, you'll never march again. Why are we spending 50 hours on fucking marching when you're never going to march again? And Garrett's been around for a long time. There's only one time that you'll all try to march, and it's at somebody's wake or funeral. You'll try to go together and march at the same time. Somebody will be elected to call the commands, namely probably somebody who had some military experience. You'll march for about 14 seconds, and then somebody will go, stop, just walk, forget it. We look like shit. Don't even fucking try. Just, we're going to walk out. And then, yeah, or your PBA delegate or union delegate will say, we're just going to walk out, blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, so we're doing all these things that there are just better ways to spend our time, right? Like, there are just better ways to spend our time. You could probably learn more about being a cop through YouTube than most police academies, to be quite honest with you.
That's something that really came to light after we started talking. You know, I talk to cops all over the country, all over the world, really, now. And the assumption of the quality, I guess, that I had in my mind was proven to, that was disproven, right?
Oh, like, yeah.
Like, and I know any cop, like, you're not going to learn everything you need to know in the academy. You're certainly not going to learn everything you need to know in training. It just takes time and effort. But the straight up lack in many academies is pretty shocking.
Like, it's why, like, literally, you're told, every cop's told the same thing. You're going to go to this place for 6 months, 4 months, whatever it is. You're going to learn nothing. Literally, every single time somebody goes to the academy, you're told by your administration, you're just going to learn nothing. When you get back here, and then what they tell you when you get back here, you'll learn the streets when you get back here. Then they'll stick you with a field training officer who, you know, is 27 years in patrol. He's miserable, been divorced 3 times, only stays in the job to work the construction jobs and the off-duty jobs, hates the chief, is disqualified from getting promoted because of all the things that he's done. This is your field training officer. And they chalk it up to, well, Joe will show him how to write a good report. This is a job that will take your life the very second you let your guard down. We interviewed a guy a couple days ago, Drew, who was off duty. Well, maybe he was on duty, but he was in a uniform that said Customs Border Patrol, walking through a supermarket when a gentleman walked up, hellbent on a killing cop, and shot him 5 times in the back. Right? Like, people are hunting for cops. I'm not saying this to dissuade you from understanding that people love the police too, but it's real. Like, how could you chalk up somebody giving subpar training to a job where we lose, comfortably acknowledging, 400 plus human beings a year in? It's wild. And you still say, right, that's the way we always did it, right? And I ask this question all the time. I go, how do you know your police academy is inadvertently killing cops? And people look at me, I'm like, I'm fucking 10 heads. And I go, how many of you learned primarily to stay on the passenger side of the vehicle on a traffic stop? Or are you being taught in the academy to still make your driver's side approaches? And far majority is like, yeah, they're still teaching driver's side approaches. Yet we can show in a 1-day training course, 15 videos of why being on the passenger side is just so much smarter. And the craziest thing of all of this, after you come to this class, 25% of those guys and girls will go back to making driver's side approaches after I show them why, how they could die. That's the reality of again, top priority is like human beings' lives, cops and civilians. Second priority is protecting, you know, or crime apprehension. Let's preserve human life first. Let's get everybody trained on how not to die and how to make sure other people don't die. You guys near the water by the ocean or anything like that?
Oh yeah. I have the beach is about a quarter mile, half mile from my house.
I find it comical that do you guys have a Marine unit at all?
My agency does not, though.
Okay. My point is like, have you guys done any water rescue training?
So, well, we punt that to the fire department, and then
great.
We
are that's responsible even for the wonderful. Recovery. That's real smart, right? You could even show people an instructional video for 35, and I talk about this all the time, for 30 minutes on water rescue training. What's the number one rule of water rescue training? You know what that is? I'm not making you look, I don't want to make you look stupid, but this is my point. Do you know what that is?
I don't, no, truthfully.
Don't get in the fucking water. That is the number one rule of water rescue training, is do anything you can to avoid getting in the water. So you grab something to throw to somebody, you find a stick, you find some kind of device that you can float over on. Did you know that your spare tire in the trunk of your car will be buoyant enough to hold you and somebody up to go rescue them? So instead, if you don't have a life vest, you can take your spare tire out of the trunk of the car, throw it in the water. And here's another one. We see it all the time. I just saw a picture of it today. Why do cops think it's a smart idea to try to employ a water rescue wearing 40 pounds of gear and a police uniform? If you think that you can swim in a police uniform, go home, put your uniform on, jump in your pool or jump in a neighbor's pool on the deep end, and let me know how differently that feels from being in a bathing suit. So my advice to you is, and I say this again for the 10th time, if you're going to have to go into water and it looks like you might be able to save a human being, there's a good shot you could, even a flood zone where the cars, take it all off. You want to try to swim with boots, right? Is that what you want to do, right? You want to try to do that? Are you trained in that? Do you know what your body's going to do? Do you understand the panic level? I've trained that way. You understand the panic level of wearing a uniform in the water, what that feels like? Do you know how to take your pants and make a flotation device with your pants? Do you know? Why does nobody talk about this? Why does nobody have a throw bag in their car? How about this one? How about everybody who has a medical kit in their car, but has no idea what's inside of it and has never trained on anything that's inside the fucking medical kit? It's wild. It's a wild thing. Hey, medical kit's in the trunk. What's inside of it? I don't know. Right. You go somewhere, somebody's bleeding. What do? I don't know. Right. Get an agency in New Jersey that doesn't even let their people wear tourniquets on their fucking rigs because they don't like the way it makes the uniform look.
Yeah. It's these decisions like that with no bearing on applicability or tactical.
They'll just pay out. Somebody's going to get shot, won't have a tourniquet. They'll pay out because it's well known. They're not allowed to have them on. They're going to do is ask fucking 85 of the people that work out of the thousands of people that work there. And that's all. They'll pay out. Just is what is not their money. But, you know, God forbid we put a tourniquet on that could save somebody. It's just a wild state of affairs. And it's terrifying at times. Maybe it doesn't sound pleasurable to you because it's actually holding people accountable and exposing the truth of this bullshit.
Yeah.
But what would you like to do? You want to just let more cops die? You want to let more people die? Is that what we're going to do? We're just going to ignore it like we've done for fucking eternity and just let people die? That's what happens at the end of it. People are dead.
And I think this current state, cops are feeling it. You know, they see some of that absurdity. They see the decisions that,
it's absurd,
at least to them, don't make sense. They see the lack of training or the lack of emphasis or the lack of care, the lack of, attention to their needs as a human being in this very tough job. And it's no wonder that people are leaving in droves and they're questioning the career, and that people don't think of this as a career so much anymore. They think of it as a thing they'll do until they get that other thing. And, you know, for anyone who's left scratching their heads, wondering what happened, like, just pay attention.
We know that there's a significant issue with leadership in law enforcement. Significant. It's the number one complaint of everybody in the profession. And some people are fortunate enough to have some great leadership. And the good news is it can be taught. The bad news is you got to get people to listen.
Right.
It can be taught. You can be taught how to be a good leader. You can go on right now and learn. And if we can start resolving some of the most major issues, I actually have a big thing on my board out here, my to-do board. Teach leadership to recruits. What leadership training do you get as a recruit? Why do you think it's not important? You think these aren't the few? We have to start planting the seeds now. Cops, we need cops. We just need better cops. You know, wild. It's wild. And you don't even know the disservice that you've been served until you have some time on the job and you go, hold on a second. Like, you know, what is going on here? And the only reason I have such an issue with it is because people's lives are at stake. Namely, other police officers as a top priority and civilians as well. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see anybody else die.
It's simple. It truthfully is easy, right? It just takes attention.
Here's a good one. I'm going to give a nugget to everybody. This is an easy one. Garrett, when you went to the academy or at your academy now, I don't know if you ever see recruits, whatever it may be. Do you guys do mock foot pursuits?
Oh, yeah, we did. We mocked everything, man.
Great. 97% of academies never once in the 4 to 6 months they go to academies for ever recreated what a foot pursuit feels like. They'll do PT, but they won't take that time of PT to achieve their objective of what they have to complete according to their training commissions. What I'm saying is, all right, you want to do an endurance drill? Make it a foot pursuit. But, you know, employ two-way radios. Have your drill instructor as the dispatcher. Have your recruit calling out locations. Switch it up. Have your recruits come in with different clothing on. Right? Bring a hat tomorrow. Bring a black shirt. Bring shorts. You're going to switch out. You're not going to wear the PT uniform tomorrow. You're our runner. And then it's, all right, recruit so-and-so, go. At headquarters, I'm running after a guy. We're westbound through the parking lot, approaching the... Go pick a place and go run around. So this way, the first time you call out a foot pursuit, we don't hear this. You know, it's just these simple change. It doesn't even cost anything. It's just a little bit of people laying down the sword because they're in control and they want things the way they used to be, my white fucking hair and my fucking xylophone sleeve. And saying, I have enough humility to understand that we can't be doing it right. How could you possibly have everything perfect when we don't even have everything perfect and we have the country's experts in the fields that we teach? How the fuck could you have it right in podunk, middle of fucking nowhere police academy, saying that, well, we have the guy that teaches this? No, you don't. You fucking don't. You got a guy who thinks he's teaching that. We don't even have every expert. And this is our fucking job. And we're a significantly sized training company. So what we're saying is, let us help you. Reach out. What do you need? Here's some advice. Change some things. It doesn't even cost money. I'm taking away the excuses of what we're supposed to do. Get them off the driver's side. Teach them the passenger side. Put some more thought and care into these things. Rant over. See what you did to me? You reversed this fucking interview onto me, you son of a bitch.
I think you covered me pretty well.
Mm. Well, listen, man, people should subscribe to the podcast. Squad Room is awesome. The coin's fucking legit. It's the only coin I kept. I love the Squad Room fucking. Where can you find a Squad Room challenge coin? You sell those?
I have them. I give them out to VIPs, guests, and I do sell them occasionally. Yeah.
It's badass, man. I love that's my favorite coin, bro. I have it right in my fucking desk. We're moving across the hall on Wednesday. So everything's kind of like in boxes and shit. But yeah, I love that coin. I appreciate it. And, you know, you're doing a great thing for the world. You really are.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And it's fulfilling to me. It's important because we need to take care of each other, you know, whether you're a former cop, a current cop, a retired cop, or a cop that's coming into the job. Man, if nothing shows you right now how we need to be a little more kind to each other, a little more willing to open up, a more willing to learn from each other, then entrench ourselves in our own dogma. Now is the time. And I love having conversations like the one we just had today where we can share ideas and maybe crack some heads open about the ideas of taking care of yourself or just trying something like a meditation or these other people we talked about. And so no, man, I appreciate you having me on. Thank you very much.
The last thing I have stemming off your last statement is, what does the blue line mean to you? The Garrett just explained what it is. So what does it mean to you when you put that shirt on? What does it mean to you? What does that mean? What does that flag mean? And are you upholding what that flag means? That's the question I have. Are you your brother's keeper? Are you there to have compassion and make sure people are all right and do the things that you don't have to do, but you do them because you understand what the brotherhood means? And this is not some secret society where we're doing illegal things. I'm saying, do you know that you could get this guy a better parking spot and move a few things around to get him a better spot closer to the event that you're working and take care of him in that way? Make him feel like it mattered. Does it matter to the guy that you know that you could do something for somebody and you chose to do it, you know, because you could? That's it, man. I mean, are you there? Are you going the extra distance for your brother and sister? Are you making sure that they're okay and well? Because if you're not doing that and you're only being a pester to your brothers and sisters, or you're harassing them in some fashion and you are not giving some courtesy professionally on every level, you shouldn't be wearing a blue line shirt. You should be fucking tossing those in the garbage because you ain't a fucking, you could be a cop all you want, but you ain't one of us. And you don't deserve to wear that blue line. And that's what it means because, and I said this in an Instagram post. There was a picture during the riots in DC of the cops got hotel rooms. The National Guard had to sleep on the floor in a garage. And I said, the next time you fucking stop a car and the guy says, I'm in the National Guard, and you think it's okay to continue to write this guy a summons when, by the way, there's thousands and thousands and millions of people committing actual crimes out there. And you don't accept that as somebody saying, you know what? I remember when these fuckers had to sleep on the floor when we got hotel rooms and they were there and they had our backs. Yet a year later, it all dissipates and you forgot that that person, hey, why you, of all the people to bother on the road, you're going to bother men and women in the military. It blows my mind. There are people who are doing such egregious things against society, out after your children, your personal belongings, your identities, selling narcotics, moving guns and drugs and all these things. And you're going to fuck with somebody in the military because they were 14 over the speed limit? Get a clue of what matters. And if you don't have a clue, come see us because we'll train you to have a clue. Got a guy wrote to me today. He goes, hey, we just lost the odor of marijuana in Rhode Island. A lot of us depend on that for PC to get into cars. I go, looks like you're going to need some training now, huh? And by the way, you needed training 20 years ago, but now you really need it because that whole fucking game's over. So we got you, bro. We got 6 classes you can take on demand right now. And you can get back into work in 3 days and be better than you ever thought you'd be. So, but again, off of what you're saying is think about what the blue line means to you and think about those times where you have options. And I'm not saying to do anything illegal. I'm saying just think about that. Garrett Tesla's the man. You're the best.
Good to see you, man.
Yeah. See you later.